Okay, Marshall, you were talking before the break about Noah and how the fact that we don't think they could collect every animal and put them on these boats or subs or whatever he had.
No, that's a physical impossibility. Anybody that reads the story in the Bible says, raises their eyebrows, as I did the first time. You know, whoa. But what actually happened, according to the Epic of Gilgamesh, is that they knew that they needed to preserve life because all of it was going to get wiped out. So they went around and they collected, believe it or not, the DNA of all of the creatures on the planet.
At the time.
And they put it in a golden box and stuck it on the ark. So that, in effect, they preserved everything, which they could then recreate when the thing was over, by this advanced scientific abilities that they had. This is an interesting thing, George.
It's fascinating. It's almost like a seed bank.
Yeah, and the fact that they describe it in the 11th tablet of Epic of Gilgamesh is another piece of evidence to let us know what they could do. And under the circumstances in the history of survival of everything, this is how that happened.
Now, did this submersible or whatever it is, did that come to rest on Mount Ararat?
Yeah, I think so. There's a picture in my book. I show three, four things that were carved into a temple facade in Egypt. And one of them is a picture of this submarine with the snorkel on it, which I think was the Ark. And then there's a picture of a helicopter, which they call the Whirlwind. And then there's a picture of a shuttlecraft, which, you know, it's amazing. What was the guy looking at?
Exactly.
Sitting up there in the temple, chiseling away at this.
What happened to Gilgamesh during the flood?
Okay. Gilgamesh lived after the flood. See, the flood was like 13,000 years ago. But the story, in his search for immortality, he finds out that he can't go up to meet with Anu and get long life from the head of the Anunnaki extraterrestrials. So it's suggested to him in the story that he goes and visits the guy who got long life. Maybe he could help him. So he goes down to the far away, which is where Noah and his wife are living. And he meets them in their house, and the story is told to Gilgamesh by this, I think, 1,000-year-old or 900-year-old individual, which doesn't help him get his immortality, but it also gives him an insight. It's kind of a vehicle to tell the story of what really happened in the flood.
Right.
You know, if you're a movie director or producer, this is a terrific way to get that story in, which is what they do on this tablet.
So what happens to him?
Well, Noah suggests certain things that he could do to maybe, you know, testing him. He recognizes that this king is off his rocker and he's doing something that's impossible to do, so he helps him. In a way, in the storyline of the epic, he finally gets him to retrieve a flower that's under the ocean, which he has to dive down and get. And this flower, if he eats it, will give him
immortality.
No, not immortality, just make him younger. But he doesn't trust it. He's still this kind of this character. It's an interesting study in his character. So he's going to take it back to the village, back to his city, and try it on one of his old cronies and see if it works before he tries it.
Smart king, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he's Gilgamesh. Gilgamesh is a fascinating character. In fact, in my book, I have a CD I made of the story of Gilgamesh, which is available to your audience. It's a fascinating story, and it's also in the book. It's the first chapter of my book. But if you wanted to see a CD on it, I have that available. And, okay, so he's on the way home, George.
So he's got this plant.
He's got this thing. He sticks it in his inside his shirt, right? Got the plant. He's going home. He takes a nap. And a snake comes out of the woods and slithers inside and eats the flower and sheds his skin. Now, that has some symbolic thing that I haven't quite figured out what it is. But anyway, when Gilgamesh wakes up and realizes that the snake has eaten the thing and it's gone, he makes a transformation in his personality. He finally gets reality. He says, okay, it ain't going to happen for me.
He gets a reality.
I'm going to die.
There's got to be some symbolism there.
I'm going to die like everybody else. And he finally comes to realize, I think maybe the story is telling us that we're all going to die eventually. There's no way we're going to get immortality.
And what's the significance of the snake? See, I'm not so sure a snake went into his shirt and ate the flower. So there's got to be some symbolism there.
I know. I know. You figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, the snake got, when he shed his skin, he got renewed life, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. But anyway, he goes back and he's now a contemporary and he writes his memoirs. As he has a scribe, and he's going to tell the story of his adventures and all the things that have happened to him in his life and the fact that he's finally accepted that he's going to die.
Tell me a little bit more about the Anunnaki making reference to their own deity, the creator of all, which sounds like God to me.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that's fascinating about the 11th tablet of Gilgamesh, is that this story of the leader wanting to wipe out humanity and humanity getting saved with the story of Noah and the Ark.
Which echoes the Bible somewhat.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, the story of Noah as it appears in the Bible, except the secret isn't told. The secret that they had sworn to kill us all.
Right.
That part. And then where the deity comes in, George, is the fact that Enki receives this message from the creator of all that his duty is to save humanity. And here's how to do it. He not only gets the message to do it, he gets the plan. And when he wakes up, he gets this in a dream. There's a tablet, a blue lapis tablet with the design for the ark on it. And he takes that, and that's the thing he shoves under the door of his son's house when he tells the wall what to do. He gives him the design of how to build this watertight submersible.
How many people you think were aboard this ship?
Well, I think just Noah and his family and maybe some friends. I mean, it was big enough to accommodate some animals. I'm sure he had animals that he put in there, but not, and then they stuck the golden box in there.
We're to believe that Noah started civilization again, right?
Yes, exactly. In fact, what happens is that once the leader finds out that it was the creator of all that caused his brother, his half-brother, to do what he did, he says, okay, then we should help them. Now, bear in mind that after this incredible tidal wave, all you've got around you is mud, and there's no way to survive. You couldn't.
Right.
Make a living. So they help. In other words, Enlil says, let's help them. And he brings down from up above all the trees and foodstuffs and animals that they need to survive the muddy conditions until they're able to get back to producing their own food.
Is there any idea who the creator of all is?
No. It's a line that's thrown out there that the message came from the creator of all and that you don't disobey. It's a destiny. When he uses the word destiny, that kind of perks up all the leaders' ears, and they don't mess with destiny. See, they actually, if it was their destiny to save these people, then they're going to save them.